the buzzer. McCord on its way. Oh my goodness.
They have to get it. With no timeouts, they do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
All right, it's the Seth Greenberg filling a generator with hot oil. Maybe the generator was on, maybe it wasn't on, edition of the world's greatest podcast with Dokic and Seth Greenberg. Hey, like a lot of people apparently, Seth, in the Northeast, you've got nothing, right? No electricity, no cell?
We've got nothing. I'll tell you one thing. Last night, a storm came through here. I'm lucky that the house is still standing. The trees were going sideways. We lost electricity. Thank goodness we have a generator. And now I actually learned how to use it. We lost internet. In fact, every time you call the internet company, I think it's the funniest thing in the world. You call the internet company, you go, we understand you your service has been discontinued, but it'll be back at 9:43. No, it won't. Why do you say 9:43? It wasn't back at 9:43. So then you call 9:43. It will be back tomorrow at 8:47 in the morning. No, it's not on at 8:47. I mean, just say it'll be on when it's on. All right, I'm done.
Yeah, or don't call.
Yeah, but I have to call you. That's just a nervous energy.
I know.
I have to call. Then I'm raking leaves this morning and branches, like there are branches all over our yard. So life is good. You know what? Life is good. I'm fine. How are you, Dan? I mean, like, what is going on? We've got Fran McCaffrey coming on. He's got Luca Garzilla coming back. The Big Ten is killing it. They got the Sumu coming back. They got Kobe Cobra coming back. They got Livers coming back, but no Xavier Tillman.
Yeah, I was disappointed in that. I get it. Everybody got to make their own decisions. And I saw a couple mock drafts with Xavier Tillman going to be in the top 25. So, you know, I guess you got to go. But, man, Seth, you were talking about the names coming back. I think the biggest one is Luka Garza. People want to so often discredit college performance by saying how he projects into the NBA. And I don't think you and I really ever do that. I think that, like, I'm going to let Luka Garza's accomplishments stand on their own as possibly the all-time greatest player in Iowa history, assuming we have a season and assuming he plays like he's played. But I was excited about that. You know, I looked at different things. Marcus Carr coming back to Minnesota was a really big deal for Minnesota. Aaron Henry, you know, we mentioned Xavier Tillman, the one that left, but Aaron Henry coming back. And then I really believe this. I really believe that DeSumo and Kofi Coburn make Illinois a top five-ish type team. Maybe they're 8-7-4. I don't know. But I put them right in the mix for a national title because DeSumo is a killer late, and Kofi Coburn just got better and better, Seth. Who are the losers? Like, I you and I spoke about this.
Well, I'll tell you, I'll give you one more winner. Corey Kispert coming back at Gonzaga is a huge win. That's to me a absolutely home run. I'll tell you a guy that didn't put his name in, who's a huge win. Garrison Brooks might be one of the most underrated dudes in America. Because, like, people don't talk about Garrison Brooks. He had a monster year last year. He's coming back. I think that's big for North Carolina. Jay Huff coming back for Virginia is huge for them. I mean, there are guys coming back. And here's the thing, before we get into, like, who lost. Here's the thing. You know why guys are coming back? One, because they realize maybe they're not pros yet. Number two is they like college. They like that experience. They like their teammates. They're the thing you always talk about. Every time you talk to a guy after he's left, he talks about how much he missed that college experience. And then for all the gurus out there saying, well, you know, we don't know if there's going to be a season this year. Well, let me tell you something. The NBA doesn't know if there's going to be a season this year either. The G League doesn't know if there's going to be a season either. And the money that's being paid in Europe is 50 cents on the dollar. So, like, you know, everyone puts it all on college. Let me tell you something. Those other leagues have bigger issues than the college situation.
Seth, I totally agree with that. I mean, and I you're absolutely right. Like, to me, when people say, well, there's not going to be a college season, I say, well, is there going to be a Greek League season? Well, is there going to be a whatever season? So, and the other thing is, and I know, you know, one of the guys we didn't talk about was Remy Martin coming back. for Danny Hurley at Arizona State. I mean, that's a player of the year type of a guy. And Isaiah Joe coming back in Arkansas, the kid can really play. And Creighton got two guys back. I mean, look.
Oh, Zagrowski is really good.
Seth, here's the deal. Then you know this as well as anybody. We in the media, I'll put myself in the media for, I guess, this conversation. So many people in the media criticize college. The college, whether it's coach is too mean or they're not getting enough or too many fouls. But you know what? The people that go to college, the people that play college basketball, love it. Love it. Love it. And I swear to you, like everybody else, I'm one of those guys that if I could go back and play one more year, God, would I love to do that. Same with you, I'm sure. So all this negativity surrounding the NCAA, blah, 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 blah. I really believe this, Seth. I think you saw two things. I saw you saw that kids understood that the market in Europe was what you said and that they just love college. And that's it. And what's not to love? Seriously, what's not to love about the environment that you're in as an 18 to 23 year old? I mean, it's fantastic. And I think this was.
And dudes are coming back, like Chris Smith, UCLA. He comes back. Smart, Javonte Smart. He obviously had another strong ass offer because he's coming back. Trendon Wofford's coming back. I mean, guys are coming back. And that's the thing I think that I don't know. It's underappreciated. Like people, you know, you mentioned Remy Martin. We said Jay Huff. I mean, you know, Eve Pons, the kid who's kind of a, you know,
he's coming back.
I mean, you know, these guys are coming back for a reason because you know what? Hey, they realized it. They took the information. They digested it. And for all people said, well, the players, you know, their backs were to the wall and they needed more time. That's such BS. It's ridiculous. They've known, they should have known whether they were staying or going. The last month, all the information is out there. I mean, like all the information is out there. So these guys, you know, look, they made decisions that's in their best interest. I mean, and that's the good thing.
Seth, you and I both know, and this is what I'm going to not do. And I think you and I've talked about this. I'm going to celebrate college basketball.
100%.
You know what I mean? Like you can find something negative in every damn thing in this world. You can. You can find. You know, okay, kids didn't have enough time. What do you want them to do? You got to protect the university as well. But I'm going to celebrate college basketball, and I swear to you, if we have a college basketball season, it's going to be absolutely dynamite. It really and truly is. And
look, I'll give you a couple losers though. Stanford, Tyrell Terry. Tyrell Terry is a guy that could get in the lane, make shots. They got a terrific freshman coming in. They had a chance to, you know, have one of those special teams. The kid, Zaire Williams, I watched film on him the other day. He's going to be one of the best freshmen in the country. He was an elite player. But losing Terry really, really hurts. It's good. We're going to bring in Fran McCaffrey right here. And you know what? Then it is good being Fran McCaffrey these days.
Hey, it's not good. It's great. You get the big fella back. Please camp back. But in my world, more importantly, you coaching both kids this year? How great is that?
It's really hard to describe how awesome it is. And I tell kind of the same story over and over. But it's really interesting because, you know, what I did was I spoke with all the coaches who coach their sons. You know, Tubby, John Beilein, Greg McDermott, et cetera. And it was really interesting. John Beilein, I thought, had the greatest outlook on it. He said, you get to see your son every day. And I get to see both of them every day. You know, obviously, you want them to play well. You want them to be on teams that win. And so far, that's happened for Connor. Patrick, of course, last year redshirted, so he'll be ready to go this year. And, you know, they're both good players. They'll both be right in the middle of it all. And, you know, just to travel with them and see them every day at practice, there's just nothing better.
I got a question. Have you, during the course of coaching them, because we're going to get to Garzilla in a second, but in the course of coaching them, did you ever have to once lose it on them, and then all of a sudden you come home and you get ripped?
Well, it's funny. The one time I lost it on Connor – That didn't happen, surprisingly, but there was one game, Seth, where it didn't go the way he had thought it was going to go or the way that he had hoped. And so he's in the back of the bus talking to his mother, and I'm in the front of the bus. And then I got an earful a little bit later. But again, you know, Beilein told me a story about that. He said, expect this. I think the first game that he coached at West Virginia, one of the first games, Patrick had 16 and they won. They beat somebody really good, and he's in the front of the bus, ecstatic. And the kid's in the back of the bus complaining that he only played 16 minutes. And then, you know, so it was almost a carbon copy of what happened, you know, to John, happened to me the one time. But, you know, I think what's been good about Connor is there have been few of those incidents. You know, he really understands it. You know, he was my son who grew up coming to practice every day from before kindergarten on, traveled with the team. You know, when I was at Siena, you know, started doing drills with the team at a very early age, came to every film session. So he kind of understands it. So he doesn't really get too sideways very often. And he's very close friends with all the guys on the team, and he recognizes what his role is. We've got the best post player in the country, throw him the ball. You know, he led the nation in assist turnover ratio for a reason. Now, we also surrounded him with some shooters, and he loads those guys up. And he understands ball movement. He understands how to play more than one position. You know, Patrick is a little bit of a different kind of player, and his approach is different. You know, he's 6'8". He's long. He's bouncy. You know, he's an athlete, runner, perfect for our style of play. But he was one of those guys that was in the gym all the time, and he just wanted to play. He wanted to shoot. He didn't want to watch film. He didn't really approach it that way. So it's interesting that, as we all know, I mean, your kids are different. I mean, they grow up in the same house, but they're different. And they complement each other well. So I'm excited to see them both out on the floor together next year.
I just remember going in there to do a game when they were probably in high school, maybe junior, maybe 8, 6, 7 years ago, whatever it was. And they're always in there, man. They always had their guys with them. It was awesome. They got their buddies, and they're coming in, man.
You're coming in like they own the place, right?
Yeah,
just take right. over. Raid the refrigerator in the office and just go. And that's one of the great things. It's such a great point that I'm thrilled. I mean, I think back to my days at Greensboro, at Siena, and then here, that exact scenario that you described, they're always there. You know, they would spend the whole day on campus, no matter where I coached, because we were in there working or we were in there playing. They were in the gym. You know, Siena, they'd go out back and play baseball and so forth. And that's, you know, that, you know, when you hear that term, you know, coach his son, I think that's what people are referring to. Guys that grow up in the gym and they're around it, they get it. They know how it all fits. They know every day is not terrific. There's good days, there's bad days, there's adversity, and we deal with it.
That's cool.
My guy used to say, why are you yelling at the players so much? I go, I don't know. Leave me alone. I don't know. That's
yeah, you need to mellow out. I mean, you had too many out of body experiences. this is unbelievable. All right, I got a question with you. How long did you know my man Garzilla was coming back, or did you find out with the rest of the world?
Well, as you know, it's a lengthy process, and I think the important thing that you have to do as a coach is be loyal to your player and helping him through that process. The thing I always say is when you recruit somebody at this level, they all want to play in the NBA, and you talk about that, you know, what's the process going to be like to get you there? We're going to help get you there. And when that time comes, you can't then turn around and try to convince them not to go because you want to coach them again. And you guys both have watched Luka grow up in our league and watched him develop. but you also know him. And anytime you have Luka Garza, you want to coach that kid for as long as you can. I mean, just selfishly, he's such a great influence in the locker room. He's such a leader. And I think it's important to allow him with his family to have whatever conversations he needs to have, so that when he does make that decision, it's with complete confidence and he's completely at peace with it and he's excited for the next chapter. And that's exactly what happened. So I had a number of conversations in particular with his father throughout the whole process. This year was different than any other. You know, I've had others go through the same thing, went through it with Tyler Cook a couple of years ago, you know, but Tyler Cook, he got to play in the Big Ten tournament. He got to play in the NCAA tournament. He got to go to the combine. He got to have individual workouts and interviews and then have conversations with agents and GMs and so forth. Now you make it a well-informed decision. You know, Luka, the only thing he had were individual discussions with NBA teams and agents. He didn't have the opportunity to go to a workout. You know, let's say that, you know, the Cleveland Cavaliers bring him in and they bring in five other guys and they just throw you out there and let's see who does what. Well, that's when he's at his best. He outplays the guy that lines up in front of him. So he missed all those opportunities. But I think there was more to it. I think he's very proud of how hard he's worked and how he's developed. You know, I will tell you that, you know, people say, are you surprised that he was this good? And I would tell you, no. Now, you know, I had a little bit of an advantage because I started watching him at a very young age because he was the same age as my son, Connor. I would see him at various AAU tournaments. So I had maybe a little bit of a different insight into him. And then I coached him. So I know him. I know what's inside of him. So, you know, I'm not surprised that he's done what he's done. But I do think he feels very strongly about our team's chances to be really good. He loves his teammates. He loves this institution and Iowa City. And I think he feels like he wants to come back and essentially, and I said this the other day, essentially bet on himself. Yeah, he wants to win a national championship potentially or a Big Ten championship or become the all-time leading scorer at Iowa, be another first-team All-American, be the National Player of the Year. But if you look at it strictly from a business standpoint, he's betting on himself. He's saying, okay, a lot of people aren't really sold on me as a first round pick because I didn't have those chances to prove it, but I'm going to be next year. And you really have to be impressed with a young guy who really has that kind of confidence in himself. Say, you know what? I will be in the first round next year because it'll be a different situation that I have an opportunity to prove.
Coach, well, every year is different. Every team is different, you know, year to year. What will be different about your team? Can he, you know, will he have the same great year? I know it's impossible to say, but is it set up for him to have the same great year? You got more weapons? What is your thought on that?
Well, I think that's a great question, Danny. I mean, you've got, Bohannon coming back. I mean, I made this comment, and it sounds ridiculous, but it's true. We essentially have seven starters back. Because Bohannon was starting, and then when he stepped it aside to have surgery, you know, Toussaint started for 22 games. Jack Nungy was starting, and he went, you know, he blew his knee out, so, you know, he'll be back. So you had a lot of weapons. You know, you throw Bohannon into the mix, and we had him for 10 games. So that lineup started for 10 games, and it was really good. You know, we beat Texas Tech in Vegas. We beat Syracuse on the road. We beat Iowa State on the road. You know, we had some really good wins there. And, you know, I think Luka and Bohannon are 1-2 and returning scorers in the Big Ten. So there's a lot of points there. But I think the more three-point shooters you surround Luka with, the better it's going to be for him. You know, you throw Jordan Bohannon, Jack Nungy, and Patrick McCaffrey, all of whom were really good three-point shooters, in with Wieskamp, C.J. Frederick. And then, you know, Connor ended up last year, we talk about his assist turnover ratio, but he, you know, he shot 36% from three-point range in Big Ten play. So, you know, we don't have a weak shooter out there. And Joe Toussaint's numbers were good. He just didn't shoot as many, and he probably won't because he's attacking most of the time. But then, you know, the difficulty is going to be, you know, we have a really good freshman class. We have a five-player freshman class, all of whom I think could help us. You know, I think Aaron Ulis and Tony Perkins in particular in the backcourt, very talented players. The Murray twins, you know, Kenyon Murray's two boys, they're both 6'8". They both can stretch the floor and make threes. And then, you know, Sunday was a great day because Lucas said he was coming back, but it was also a great day because the 7-foot recruit we have from Worcester Academy via London, England, Joshua Gundelay, he finally got into the country. And that has been an ordeal. We could do two more podcasts on that. you know, getting him into the United States was not an easy task. And he's here now, and we're thrilled to have him. So, you know, I think you look at this year's team with substantially more depth than we had last year. You know, and that's a fine line, guys. And both of you guys, you know, coach at the highest level. You know, sometimes it's better to have a shorter bench. You know, the guys that are playing are more relaxed, they're more comfortable. They know they're not coming out. The guys coming off the bench have a specific role. They're going to play a certain amount of minutes, and that's it. You know, now we've got a lot of guys who want minutes that are on that bench, and you got to keep them happy. And, you know, maybe we got a redshirt, one or two players, and we'll see how that goes. But then again, you know, I didn't expect last year for Jack to get hurt, for Patrick to have his health issues. And then, you know, Bohannon, we kind of knew he's either going to try to go or he's going to take a step back and have his second surgery. So he had the second surgery.
What scars need to do to get better? Where will you see improvement?
Well, one of the things last year that I think you saw and probably pointed out, defensively, he was light years of where he was the year before. And I couldn't be more proud of him because it's always the knock on him. Okay, well, you know, can he play in the NBA? He can't guard a ball screen. Well, yes, he can. Watch the games. He can guard it. Now, he struggled with it his first 2 years. He did. And we had to change how we guarded ball screens. And then he worked on his athleticism, his foot speed, his lateral mobility. He was a rim protector. He did it with staying out of foul trouble. He slides his feet. He gets his feet apart. He gets his arms out. He's active. And he talls up. And he blocked 55 shots. So he was a guy that had a presence defensively. I still think he can get it even a little bit better. And one of the reasons why he's good is he sprints back. You know, as I said, you guys have coached at the highest level. A lot of guys sprint if they sniff a hoop, but they don't all run back on defense. And he does. And he runs back and he's talking and he became more of a communicator defensively. I always said the best I've ever had was Adam Woodbury. You know, he was the coach on the floor, told everybody where to go, where the ball was, who was where, the ball screens. He knew the other team's plays inside and out. And it took Luka a little bit of time, and that's what he became. He's got the scouting report assimilated in his brain. He knows exactly what he has to do and who he's guarding. So I think from that standpoint, you'll see him improve a little bit, even though he's already improved dramatically. I think he'll improve at the free throw line. I mean, I think 2 years ago, he was up near 80%. Last year, he was down in the mid-60s. So I think, and I think those numbers will go up. Because we're going to throw the ball to him, they're going to foul him. So you want him to, you know, to be up around that 80%. But I also think the three ball. And it's one of the first things that attracted me to him, guys. When I recruited him, he was a dynamic three-point shooter. And we gave him the green light. And early on, he was pretty good. And then he had, if you guys remember his sophomore year, he had the major surgery. That really, I think, it's amazing he did what he did that year. He was the MVP of the 2K Classic. He finished strong. He was terrific in the NCAA tournament. But that was something that was really difficult to overcome. You have a 9-pound cyst removed from your abdomen, and the stress that was on all of us because we didn't know, you know, what was it cancerous? Was it attached to other organs that were going to have to be removed? I mean, this is really intricate stuff. So he came through that really well, But if you see him now, he's in the best shape I've ever seen him in. He is cut. He's strong. He's athletically powerful. So you're going to see him do things in traffic physically and athletically that he's not done before. But I think you're going to see a guy who's going to be up near 40% from three-point range. And he shoots deep. So you have to play him everywhere on the floor. He's brutal. He's brutal in the post. You throw the ball into him in the post, he's going to score unless the double team comes. But those guys are easier to guard if they're always in the same place. You know, we're going to have him on the block. We're going to have him at the elbow. We're going to have him at the top of the key. We're going to pick and pop with him. We're going to pick and roll with him. He's going to be in the trail spot. He's going to be first post down. He'll run the wing. So he's going to be everywhere on the floor, which will make him really hard to guard. And the reason we're going to do that is because we can, and he has the ability to perform well in all those different places.
How about Joe Wieskamp? I mean, like, you know, I had him when in Eurocamp, and he was absolutely the most fun kid to coach. I mean, all he wanted to do is get better and better and better. Did he mess up? Like, was there a time where you were worried about him coming back and like, what do you expect of him now? Because I think he's one of the most complete players in the Big Ten, and I don't think people talk about him like that.
Yeah, I agree with you, Seth. I think it was a lot of the same stuff for him that we just talked about. Had he had more opportunities to go to the combine, to individual workouts, because he did the workouts a year ago and did well. And we probably had as much NBA activity last fall for him as we did for any player since I've been here, you know, whether it be Marble or Aaron White or Jared Utoff, Tyler Cook. We had a ton of NBA guys in here, as you would imagine, but might have been the most for Joe. I think a lot of people thought he was going to come out. I think people talk more about, you know, he had a couple down games towards the end of the year, and I think people remember that. They don't remember, I mean, the spectacular games that he had all year long, or he carried us almost by himself in some games. It was he and Luka and C.J. Frederick. And that's the thing, you know, with C.J., I mean, he led the Big Ten in three-point shooting. And those two guys together, I think, really, you know, and then you factor in Bohannon, and, you know, now you've got a lot of different weapons.
Yeah.
But I think what you're going to see with Joe, Seth, to kind of get back to your question, what he's doing now off the dribble is amazing to watch. And that was always the knock on him. Well, he's a catch-and-shoot guy. Well, that wasn't necessarily true either, because he was a catch-and-shoot or catch-and-rip and attack the rim. All right, but now he's got a little bit of wiggle in his game. That's the word. That's the new term in the NBA. Does he have any wiggle? Well, he's got wiggle now, and he's also now he's going to be a junior. I mean, physically he's stronger. He's in great shape, and I think what you're going to see now is a guy. You talk about weapons. He is really a weapon every time he catches the ball.
Hey,
he's
coach.
He's a good player.
He's so good. You, I love watching your team for a lot of reasons, but one of them is you don't wear my ass out with high ball screens all the time like so many folks do. And I hear so many coaches saying, well, kids just don't know how to cut off screens, so we go – how much teaching, because your team really cuts, your team screens and cuts and pops and slips and all the good stuff. How difficult is it to teach a modern kid that type of movement?
You're right, and it's really interesting because when you watch the game these days, it seems like everybody runs the same stuff. It's run up, yeah, ball screen, two guys on one side, one guy on the other. And one of the things we have to guard against when we're running our traditional motion, which, you know, it's basically patterned after one, you know, well, I mean, the Coach Knight's five out motion, essentially, it's all reads, curl cuts, flare screens, fades, you know, to keep the post open as much as you can. Sometimes with Luka, he'll roll in there and stay in there, and it looks a little more four out, one in. But it's kind of what I was talking about a minute ago. Like, he gets out of there, and he screens and rolls. He screens and pops. He faces up. and he feeds the post. It's just a better way to play. I think with the sophistication of scouting these days and every game being able to be downloaded, you kind of want that free-flowing ball movement, get it moving side to side, not guard to guard, wing to wing. And that gives you better angles for post feeds. It gives you a better opportunity for high-low action. It gives you opportunity for a random side ball screen roll, side ball screen pick and pop with a double away that happens naturally. Now you're playing a team that wants to switch everything. All right, well, that's tying up those defenders, and that gives us all the space we need on the other side of the floor. So what happens is when you play that way all the time, those things that you're referring to kind of happen naturally. They just sort of develop. You just see it. You see the guy's going to screen and slip because you see when they turn their backs because they're going to switch. Now you drive the ball up their backs. You know, things of that nature that are, we break it down with drills and we teach it, then we show it on film. But when the game starts, as you all know, both of you, it has to happen naturally. It can't be scripted. And I, you know, it's not that we don't run sets, because we do sometimes, but I'm not a guy who just wants to come down and call a set and run a set. I think it really enables the defense to lock you up, especially with everybody wanting to play pack line and the physicality that we see in our league.
I think it's a great point. It just, you know, the unpredictability of teaching guys how to play rather than just run plays, and all of a sudden now they make plays out of your actions. I mean, guys get more easy baskets. I used to say this about Eddie Sutton's team. Eddie Sutton would get more easy shots just by getting his guys cutting hard, curling hard, replacing, back cutting, moving, and that's what you guys do. Besides that, you get down the floor so damn quick. It's incredible. Now, you said something the other day. I read a quote. You said, we're going to play college basketball this year. We're going to have a championship. Not that that's breaking news. I agree with you. But, you know, what's behind that? Obviously, we all want a championship. We all want a season. I know you're in those high-level meetings. They don't let Dokic and I in those meetings anymore because we talk too much. But especially me, you know, Dan's more diplomatic these days. It's amazing. It's when Dan's more diplomatic than me, I start to worry.
I never thought I would hear somebody say Dan and diplomatic in the same
right.
sentence.
I'm offended. Well, I'm offended.
My goal is to try to keep him employed. Is it, you know, like, we do this podcast. I have one goal, is, you know, making sure Taylor knows that we're editing that out. Dan didn't say that. But he also keeps me in check. So, I mean, it's kind of a checks and balances without the political affiliations.
That's awesome.
Fran, it worked. All right, here's the criticism. Iowa doesn't guard well enough. You hear it? Do you hear it? Do you believe it? You work on it? What's your thought?
Well, you know, I think there's a certain element of truth to it. I think when you look at a couple of years ago when we struggled, it was really evident, Dan, you know, it was 3 years ago. We were 14-19. If you looked at our offensive numbers, okay, we shot, I think, 38% from three as a team, like 48% from the field as a team. We shot like 77% from the free throw line. We had like 200 more assists and turnovers. We had a +5 margin on the glass, right? You look at those offensive numbers, that should be a team that wins 20. And we lost 19. All right. So you go back to, you know, like okay, it's a fair question. All right, what is my background? What have I always done? I've always been an offensive coach, you know, and I think we all know there's certain guys that just preach defense, defense, defense. Well, I preach offense, 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 you know, shooting won the war. Okay. So we're going to shoot threes. We're going to go in transition. I'm going to develop confidence in my guys. You go, you attack, you don't be worried about me. Don't be worried about me micromanaging your game. You go make plays for yourself and your teammates. And we've always had great success doing that. The problem you have at this level is the other teams are so talented, you've got to be better defensively than we were. Now, most of the times, we're pretty good. We're not going to be the tops of the league. We're not going to be the tops of the country. But we had to really reevaluate 3 years ago what we were teaching, how we were teaching it, and we had to insist and buy in to being better and getting better. And we did that, and our numbers have significantly increased. I think when you start talking about this is a national championship contender, I think we still have to take one more step defensively. And I think we can. And it starts with veteran guys. And we have a veteran squad. You know, it's a physically tough team. We've got length. We've got size. We've got depth. We've got some guys that can rim protect. You know, Jack Nungy is a good shot blocker. And our other guys are all physical and understand angles and understand and communicate, okay, are we switching or are we not? Okay, we're playing ball screens this way. Well, then get there. Get where you're supposed to get to. Don't be late, because if you're late, then everything breaks down and somebody's shooting a wide open three. So we're still going to change defenses. We've had real good success with our 1-2-2, three-quarter court press. You know, I probably play a little more zone than most teams that you guys see. And I believe in that. We play a couple different zones. We play them a couple different ways. You know, a lot of times, you know, I'll be watching one of our games and one of the announcers will say, well, they're playing a matchup. Well, it's sort of like a matchup, but, you know, there's a lot of intricate things that we're doing that you know, I think it's interesting, because when I worked for Coach McLeod, he would always say, you're just confusing your own guys, our own guys. So you got to be careful, okay, changing two defenses too much and having too many nuances about what we're going to do and how we're going to play it, because then you have breakdowns. And then if you have a breakdown in this league, they're scoring. But I'm of the philosophy that by changing defenses and by working on them, that we keep the other team a little bit on their toes. We keep a little bit more side to side, east and west and north and south, as they're trying to figure out, okay, are they in a 3-2? Are they in a 2-3? Are they in a 1-3-1? Is the 1-3, or are they, is that the 1-2-2, or is that a 1-3-1? You know, those kinds of things that I've had success with over the years. And quite frankly, most of the coaches that I played for or coached with were changing defensive coaches. You know, Digger Phelps changed defenses. Bob Weinhauer changed defenses. You know, when I worked with Tommy Schneider and Craig Littlepage, and we changed defenses, Coach McLeod was a little more half-court man. We're going to teach it, and we're going to grind, and we're going to hold you, you know, under 41%. And, you know, a lot of teams play that way. But, you know, coming out of a timeout, I'm going to be probably in a different defense. So, you know, whatever you diagram, you might have to diagram three things. So that's how we're going to play it. But I think it's a fair question, and I think we have to be a little bit better in that area than we've been. And last year, we were better than we were the year before, and we were substantially better the year before than we were 3 years ago.
Well, I'm just happy that you explained that to Dan. So next year when he calls a game, he can actually identify the defense correctly.
So well, Dan's done so many of our games. He's usually right. I mean, like, he knows our team inside and out. Like, he'll, you know, he recognizes, you know, what we're doing. And, you know, and I think it's one of the things that I appreciate with Dan. You know, not only does he know that kind of stuff, but he knows your guys. You know, we can talk about, okay, you have a responsibility as a TV person to break the game down and provide a level of expertise. And that's true. And that's why you guys are doing what you're doing. But at the same time, you know, we're talking about young guys, and I don't think that should go unnoticed. You know, you talk positive, you know, talk positively about our guys. Are working hard. They're, you know, at least for the time being, they're still amateur athletes. And
for another month or so.
Hey, I gotta ask. One of the, and I'll probably get in trouble for saying this, but one of the coolest things.
Oh boy.
Well, You guys, I did the game at Iowa State, and Bohannon gets into it with Iowa State people. His last game, I think, is going to be that game, or at least you got to make a decision. Ultimately, it was his last game. And
right.
My boy just signed his shoes and left them on the court. Coach, as an outsider, that was the greatest moment in the college basketball season last year that nobody did. I loved every minute of that, Coach. That was unbelievable.
Well, you know, he ended up selling those shoes for charity for $25,000.
I saw it.
So a lot of other people agreed with you. You know, I was in the locker room. I didn't even know it happened. And all of a sudden, you know, somebody brought them in and gave them back to him. I guess it's something that was kind of ongoing.
Yeah.
You know, with that rivalry, I think Monte Morris might have said something like he was going to do that before. And I think we won, so he couldn't. So Bohannon's like, we're going to win, and I'm going to do it. One of those kind of things. Before that, he's always going to stoke the opposition. He has an uncanny ability to do that, and still rise to the occasion. You know, right before the game, I mean, you remember what he tweeted?
I remember there was something going on. Tell me, I do.
He said, you know, we're heading over to Lames.
Yes.
You know, not a lot of people are going to do that.
Yes.
Okay. They're just not. And I didn't know that was coming. I'm not on Twitter. And somebody said, you know, but like, as college athletes are going to use their platform and they're going to say what they're going to say. And some are going to want to be under the radar and some are going to be out there. It's one of the things, you know, going back to when I recruited Jordan, because as you both know, he was really under recruited and it was not his fault. He should have been recruited by everybody. He was that good. But one of the things that I think really separated him was that level of confidence. You know, he's sort of cocky and confident in his own shoes, but he's able to maintain his composure and compete and come through in the clutch, you know, like very few other players can. And it's been impressive to watch. You guys have seen it. He makes big shots. He makes all his free throws late. He'll have a game where he hasn't driven the ball all game, and he'll drive and get a 3-point play right when you need it. You know, and he just understands what he can do, what our team needs, and he's absolutely fearless. And you know, he's not afraid to get into it with the opposition. It's not something I encourage, but again, I don't stand in their way. If they want to get out there on social media, go ahead.
Come on, Fred. Let's be honest. You're feisty, just like him. I mean, something you don't encourage, but down deep, there's a little guy on your shoulder going, "Yeah, I like that."
Hell yes.
Well, you're right, Seth. You're right because. I basically just said it's one of the reasons I recruited him in the first place. Because he's always been that way. I mean, you go back to when he was in seventh grade, he was like that.
Oh, we all like a guy. Well, let me tell you something. All of us want a guy on our team that basically, you know, he's confident enough and tough enough to say what he thinks, and then he can go and back it up. I mean, that's the sign of a guy that's a good player. I mean, obviously you don't want a guy that's just going to spend all his time, you know, busting his opponent. But, I mean, you surely, in a rivalry game, anything you can do to get an advantage, to get inside someone's head. I know Dockage was big in rivalry games. I mean, look what he did to Jordan.
Oh, stop. All right, let's move on.
I remember that. I watched that game, Danny. That was pretty impressive. Right.
Yeah. Kicked his ass. That's all I got to say.
We won't get into the game that followed that. That's okay.
No.
But anyway.
No. I was like the Raspberries. I was a one-hit wonder. That's all.
Unbelievable.
Franny, thanks, man. It's great stuff.
And Fred, you're the best, man.
It's great, man.
Love you guys. Keep it going. Look forward to seeing you soon, both of you.
All right. How great is that? Hey, Seth, before we wrap up, let's go quickly with just some people that we thought, you know, I don't want to call them losers, but didn't make out so well. I'll lead off. You and I have talked. I'll say Purdue. Lost the two kids. Still a lot of enthusiasm for a young team, but Eastern, who still hasn't found a home in Harms, I think they got hurt.
Yeah, I would say Stanford. Michigan State with Xavier Simpson. I mean, Xavier Tillman, I mean, is a Final Four team. They might be a Final Four team without him. But, like, that dude's feel, his passing, his toughness, his, I mean, like, you can't replace him. And I think Terry, the kid at Stanford, Tyrell Terry, that's a huge loss because they had a chance to really have a breakthrough. I mean, like, Stanford had a chance. Let's face it, since Jared Haas has been there, they have underachieved. I don't know if they've underachieved. They just haven't been very good. They have players returning, a big-time recruit, and an elite leader in Terry. He leaves, and they are a rudderless ship in a lot of ways. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Yep, I would. I really and truly would. I've got to ask you one question. I'm going to ask you this every time we do a podcast. All right? We have no special insight. I'm going to preface it with that, unless you do, because I certainly don't.
No.
Do you think we'll have college basketball?
Yeah, I do. I'm going to say, look, I hope we have college basketball because we love it. And I mean, and you know what? I mean, there's something special about it, and that's why you've seen all these kids returning. I go back to, Kevin Willard had a great, great point. He says start earlier than start later. Students are going to be leaving campus earlier. In essence, you can create a bubble between middle of November and January. My gut feeling is yes, we will, unless all of college athletics goes on strike. And you know what? All those guys that go on strike are going to miss an incredible experience, number one. And the guys that opt out, and the one thing I want to say, I got three daughters. Two of them play college athletics. You've got a son that plays college athletics. You've got a stepdaughter that plays college athletics. If someone decides to opt out, I have no problem. Everyone's got to do what's in their best interest, what's in their heart of hearts. 100%. If that's how you feel, I'm all for it. But the second you opt out and that school keeps you on scholarship, all right, you're not part of the program. You're not part of the program. That's just the way it is. You decided to take yourself out of the program, which was your choice, and I've got great respect. But once you decide to opt out, you can't be, in the weight room. You can't be in the locker room. You can't be in the inner circle because, again, it's not safe. The reason you're opting out is because of safety concerns and health concerns, which I have 110% respect for. But, we're hearing all these things about kids opting out, and that's great. And I've got a wife's got a respiratory disease. It's impacted everything that we do. But if you do that, you can't have them both. And I don't understand the uproar when people say, well, kids opt out, and people are all upset about the institution for not letting them participate in the things they want to participate in. It just doesn't work that way. Am I wrong?
No, you're 100% right, Seth. And the other deal is, if I'm opting out because of health concerns, that's a big risk to opt out, okay? So my guess is I have researched this if I'm opting out. I know where the strengths and weaknesses are in terms of where I can go, where I should go, where can I go, what's a weakness? I go to a bar, that's a weakness. So if I'm opting out, I've made that choice. And this isn't a personal thing like get a kid out of here. This is simply like you've decided that the weakness in your health is by being around a football team. That's what you've decided. So fine, keep your scholarship and don't be around the football team. And I have no problem with a coach saying that. I have no problem. I mean, people do, and maybe this gets us in trouble, but coaches are viewed as bad guys. But if you don't want to look, if I were coaching right now, Seth, there would be far few managers, trainers there. I would limit it to so few people just simply because of the threat. So if you're not playing in games and fully engaged in the team, you can't be here. You just can't, because I want less, not more. I don't want a team that's going to go play football on Saturday. All right. They're in a hotel the night before a game. I got a guy that's around the team practicing with the team. He's not playing on Saturday. So he's out at the bar Friday night before the game. Now he's going to come in to my locker room? No, opt out. Great. Do it. But I don't think you can expect to be around the team, and certainly not if I'm the coach. But maybe we're both too old school and hard. But that's how I look at this.
I don't even think that's old school. My biggest, my interesting thing, Lee, the kids that opt out, like I say, have 100% respect. That's in your heart of hearts. But I'm interested to see the lifestyle those guys live. So if you're opting out, that means you're basically putting yourself in a bubble, and you basically put yourself in a quarantine, and you want to be in a safe environment. So, you know, you're not going to fraternity parties. You're not going downtown. You're not going to the movies. You're not going to the dinner out. I mean, because all those places are at, look, I know every place that's at risk, because I know the places. I've basically opted out of any and every interaction with people. I mean, and that's how I'm living right now because of my wife's condition. So like if you do it, you do it. I mean, that's just the way it is. So, I mean, I'm interested to see the guys that do opt out, if they walk the walk.
There's no question. And that's a big, yeah. That's a big, big, yeah.
But I respect anyone who does it, and I wish them well. And I'm like, shoot, I don't want anyone getting sick. I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, I want, ideally, let's get a vaccine and let's get going.
Totally with you on all that. Totally. Yeah.
So that was one of the world's greatest podcasts with Fran McCaffrey. There's no doubt about it. And if you, wherever you get, you listen to your podcast and download, please rate us. There's only one rating that I'd be rated, and that's a 5. And download us, and we will see you next week. What do you think, D-Squared?
Perfect, man. Let's have a great summer. Let's hope college basketball, college football, baseball continues, NBA continues. Let's go.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.